It's Thursday, December 8th, 2016, and you're listening to episode 426 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Brodor.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
All right.
And you know what's comfortable?
Your ass?
Yes!
Are you kidding?
I
creamed my jeans. I sat down and I was like, oh.
You know what I'm doing right now? I'm rocking back and forth.
Swiveling. I shouldn't swivel because it's going to make the audio horrible, but I'm swiveling.
This is wonderful.
These chairs don't squeak the way the old ones did.
So I thought that was my hips squeaking. They've been worn down.
They are, Papa. I'm not afraid that the chair is going to fall apart because the legs aren't bent.
Right.
That actually was a thing. All right. So for anyone who's not following this, in the old studio, because I just moved across town to a different house. So, for starters, if
palatial mansion.
If there's any audio hiccups in this, I apologize, but it's a brand new room. It's the same setup, but it's still brand new acoustics, so there's going to be some kinks to work out. Plus, on top of that, I actually need to decorate the room, because the room being as bare as it is, not having all the piles of BS everywhere, it's actually causing a bit of an echo. But anyways, point being that when I moved, I evaluated all of the chairs, and of the chairs, I think we were only able to save one. The others were all so clearly bent.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't just uncomfortable. They were dangerous.
Yeah.
And they had to be thrown away.
Every time you sat down, Dan, Chad and I would look at you, and we would just wait for that moment that that wooden chair was going to collapse.
Oh, it wasn't wooden. It was a metal chair, but it was bent backwards about 10 or 15 degrees. And so we threw all those out. So for all of you that are backing us on
Patreon. Yeah, you screwed up our Deadpool. Thanks.
But for all of you that are backing us on Patreon, I appreciate that because we were able to get brand new. This weren't super expensive, but still. Brand new office chairs that are not killing our asses nor threatening to break our backs.
Are you kidding? There's HJs at XCon. That's all I'm saying. HJs at XCon.
Brodor's just handing them out. Yep.
The rest of us are going to XCon. He's going to Triple X.
He's going to be down at your local record store just handing them out.
Now we know what's going to happen in the VIP suite.
Yeah.
Now we know what's going on in the champagne room.
So somebody asked, you know, when we get these chairs, are Brodor and I going to stop complaining about the chairs? Yes, we will stop complaining about the chairs. That's done.
That's a fair point.
Right. Now we have to move on to the next issue.
Yeah.
But that was my ultimate test because obviously I did a solo recording or two down here. Plus just living here, since this is where my computer is, I've been playing some solo video games. So I've been sitting in these chairs for several hours.
So you're using these chairs for things other than Fear the Boot?
Yes.
And what? It's totally, is that even legal?
It's embezzlement. But I noticed that they were not hurting my ass, right?
Right! You have been doing the show so long, you were used to the ass pain.
Yes.
It's like you associated it with the pleasures of doing the show.
Sure. It's like...
Talk slowly. Use your bedroom voice.
This isn't exactly sexy.
To you.
For my panic attacks, they give me Schedule 4 narcotics.
Oh, my God.
And
that's
these,
my fetish.
These narcotics taste terrible. But because they bring me sweet, sweet relief, I have come to associate their terrible taste with something wonderful. And it's become an acquired taste of that sweet, sweet benzodiazepine loving. That sweet green and blue touching my tongue and exciting my GABA receptors.
I have to say that that is now my fetish. I'm so creeped out in a good way.
Borderline narcotic abuse.
It scares me. The chat is between me and the door right now after hearing all of that.
It's true, though. The freaking Valium and Xanax tastes like crap.
So,
but when you have a problem where that's the relief, you start to free associate that taste with the coming relief to the point you start to... I mean, it's not addictive, but you do start to accept or even like the flavor.
I used to get a gel cap. So a gel cap, it's hollow. It's two pieces of plastic or gel or whatever.
Yeah.
And they press together and there's powder inside. There's that medicine is inside and then it dissolves in your stomach and does its thing. Well, apparently this batch of this medicine that I was taking, about 1 in 5 pills was not sealed correctly.
Oh.
I would pop it in my mouth and I have to take a drink, right? Well, I'd pop it in my mouth, take a drink, and it would get to, like, right where the Adam's apple is in my throat, and then split open, and it would, like, I wouldn't gag reflex, but it would just spread out all over my palate and the back of my tongue, and I would be sitting there, you know, doing my computer, tap, 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 pop the pill, take a drink, and then people would go, are you okay?
I make that same noise at my computer.
So let me give you some adventures in natural remedy pseudoscience.
Oh, so for starters,
that too is my king.
So for starters, anyone that's been following medical research, they're now actually, for anyone, there's two types of cholesterol, LDL or low-density lipoproteins, whatever.
Just say good cholesterol and bad cholesterol.
Good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. Yeah. Right. And the bad cholesterol, they know is bad, and they still believe is bad. The good cholesterol, they thought, may actually clean the arteries or
help. The difference between donuts and fish.
Right, precisely. Yeah. But now they're actually starting to believe that's not the case, that they have some evidence that the HDL, the good cholesterol, may not be helping. It may simply be a harmless substance that's present. But because I have, both of them are low for me. So I have low good cholesterol and low bad. And so overall, that's an okay thing. But some doctors are like, you might want to up your good cholesterol.
You need to eat more fish donuts.
Well, precisely. And I already do eat a lot of fish. You know?
Donuts.
I want to do a gentleman's club called Fish Donuts.
And so I started taking these fish oil tablets. And when those things, like, you don't swallow them fast enough and they dissolve, oh my God. Gross. Now you think that's bad. Okay, let's go even deeper into
your throat,
into pseudoscience here. So
that was the tagline in Fish Donuts. Let's go even deeper
into pseudoscience.
No,
pseudoscience was one of the dancers. Someone was trying to convince me that I had candida, which is basically it's like a
sounds like a canned fruit drink.
Well, it should be.
Or I thought it was that bar in Star Wars,
right?
But
or one of the dancers at Fish Donuts.
Yeah. But candida,
now on stage three, candida.
Make it rain.
But candida is basically some kind of like yeast-like infection of the
Don't insult her like that. She had a problem. She got over it.
What she is an NPC in the next game I run.
Wow. I almost put a spit take.
So there was some suggested cure for this. I don't even know what it was. But when
penicillin?
No.
$1 bills.
When these gel caps popped open, it was seriously the most foul, rancid substance that humanity...
That you ever gave a dollar to.
That I've ever given a dollar. But that has ever, ever existed in humanity. It is so disgusting. I don't even remember what it was, but it was so disgusting.
Mm.
And holy crap when that stuff would split open. And I never associated it with anything good. Like, never, ever, ever associated it with anything good. But that was not what the show was about. So, yeah, okay, so I need to decorate.
Bring it back around so we're not a bonus episode.
Yeah. And I need to decorate this room so we can break up the sound a little bit. And bear with us because new acoustics and all, so there's going to be some tinkering with the audio before we get it perfect. But, okay, so we had a banter topic here we're going to kick off with. Because we had another banter topic that got kicked to the main topic.
Yeah.
This is way too much inside football.
Right.
So, Chad, some people were asking you after that episode where you laid down the law on the cell phones, what happened?
Okay.
How did that turn out?
So, the quick background, I mean, this is going to be super quick, is my gaming group, of which Wayne is here, and Wayne was one of my good guys, because he's a GM. too, and it annoyed him. Everybody used cell phones. Everybody was always playing on their cell phones. And then we had a conversation. When I started this new game, I'm like, you know, hey, I'm doing a lot of stuff that's kind of outside my wheelhouse, but is, you know, what you guys want. Rule system, sticking to the rules, not tinkering with them, notes, you know, huge, big, long plot, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting what you guys want. I'm integrating into the game. We're going to make this really awesome. I have one request. No cell phones. And everyone agreed to it. It wasn't like, oh, I don't know about that. No, everyone agreed to it. It's the one rule. And people slowly started breaking it over time. And then we talked to them, and then they put it away, and then they started breaking the rule again. And it was not just Pat. Because some people actually contacted me and said, you know, well, you're really bagging on Pat. Well, Pat was one of the bad people, but it was a group effort. It was a team effort to get on these cell phones. But so that was the quick and dirty. Dan and I had a duo episode where I just was at the end of my rope leading into the episode. And it was something that I had been thinking about like all week. And it was like really grinding on me. You know what really grinds my gears? And so I kind of let loose on the episode. Since then, the very next episode, Pat and Wayne got on, and I had had the conversation with my gaming group about that. And Pat and Wayne got on the next episode, and I thought they were going to talk about the cell phone thing and what I did. Except Pat tried to kill everybody on a golf course.
Yes, so, he did.
And so that kind of distracted away from the topic.
And Pat, like you, doesn't actually listen when he's not on the show.
Yeah.
So he never heard any of the conversation. Right. So I, on the other hand, do.
Yeah.
So I was probably the only one that was there that has listened to the recording, because you were there when you recorded, so I know you didn't listen to the recording.
But I'm the one who said it.
Exactly. So I'm probably the only one that was in the group as well as listened to the recording.
So since then, I have had a lot of people kind of reach out to me and ask me, you know, well, how'd that go? Because I admit I was perturbed. I was perturbed on the episode. I wouldn't say I was angry or vicious or anything, but you know,
you weren't like me when we got out of your truck tonight before dinner. Like, I was like, what?
Right. It sounded like, you know, things could have gone badly or they could have gone well. Mm-hmm. And I've had people reach out to me and say, well, you know, how did it go? You know, what happened? And then I've had people, you know, on Facebook and whatnot, and in the course of conversations, somebody posted a link to a Kickstarter where it's basically a Faraday cage, a box. It's a $75 box. It's all it is. $75 box that you put your cell phones in, and then it blocks all the signals.
I'm in.
Right.
You know, I can have my $75.
I can actually save you some money because there's already a box in most households that will...
Your microwave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could actually put the phones in the microwave. You don't need to run it. Just put the phones in the microwave.
No, running it helps.
Yeah.
don't run the microwave.
Yeah, don't run the microwave. But that actually will block many cell signals. Yeah.
So, and you know, when actually that person, who I'm very sorry, I don't remember who posted that, but...
Candida.
Yes. Thank you, Candida. I apologize for Dan's earlier comments about your health matters, but... When you posted that, it kind of hit me. It's like, you know what? We never talked about what happened.
Okay.
And we never got
so what did happen?
Wayne?
Okay. So I listened to the episode, and the conversation was a lot stronger on the episode than it was in person. I think it was just a case of you got all worked up.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it also is the people listening to the episode didn't necessarily know some things about Chad. When Chad says he's, you know, one of the things he was going to do was stop running, delete all the notes, all of that. That's not a vindictive move by Chad, like some people thought it was. Chad does that with every game he runs.
Yep.
He doesn't keep the notes for any of them. He doesn't keep the character sheets for any of them. We actually can watch him take his character sheets, rip them up, throw them in the trash can. No nostalgia.
I am all about the new. That's why I did it.
That came off a lot more vindictive than you meant it to.
It did, yeah.
And because I know you, I know that's just what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So going in, I had no idea what this conversation was going to be like because I listened to the episode before that Sunday. I was the only one at the table who had, though. So I knew the conversation was coming. I'm just like, okay, is this going to be a smooth conversation or is this going to be a train wreck?
Right.
And I thought Chad very adeptly had the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If he was rolling a charisma roll, he nailed it.
He doesn't always nail it on some of these conversations.
No, I do not.
I can think of a few times in the past where it just, he came in with a solid point and the wording just out the door.
And it's a one.
Yep.
That counts for something, right?
But no, he came in, he laid it out. He made the suggestion of, okay, well, what are we going to do to fix this? My suggestion is we take all of the phones in the beginning and we set them off to the side. He offered to go out and buy a phone charger to set there so all the phones can be sitting on there charging. Mm-hmm. And approached it very logically. For me,
if you guys want to even make this more fun, are you familiar with the iSmart charger?
No.
There is a...
Oh, yes. Yes.
There is a company called iSmart that has a charger where when you turn it upside down, it says plus Jews exclamation point because of...
Just the font.
Just the way they screwed up the font. And they changed the logo to avoid too much kerfuffle, but I managed to bag one of the original plus Jews charger. So if you want... Because electricity is not enough. Your phone needs electricity... Plus Jews. Right. So if you want a plus Jews charger just to make taking people's cell phones
God's more, chosen people are not enough. It's plus it's God's chosen
exactly.
people.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you want to add in some pizzazz, you know, another element where it's not just electricity they're getting, there's some real kind of fun and spunk to this, I would be happy to donate the plus Jews charger.
Well, consider it.
What was amusing to me about it more than anything else, the decision came down between everyone. Okay, we will gather all the phones at the beginning of the session. It will go on this tray, and based on where the plug is, it's going to set on this side table. Mm-hmm. That's the table next to me where I put my phone at the beginning of every game anyway.
Yeah.
Nothing changed for me whatsoever.
None. Except you have more attentive co-players.
That's why it amused me so much, is because I didn't even change where I put my phone.
So everyone agreed to this. They put their phones on there. Yeah. Only check them at breaks, whatever. And that was that.
That was that.
If the phone rings, you know, we get it and hand it to you. Because nobody's really receiving calls here.
Right.
You know, it's people using their phones to get out of the game.
You know, there's something that I've noticed about internet drama. And here's the thing about the internet. Obviously, the internet is populated by people.
Right.
And while I think the internet does bring out some genuinely novel traits of human psychology and sociology, I think more than anything else, it simply just makes it easier to see things that were already true happening very loudly, very honestly, and very quickly. But one of the things that I have noticed about internet drama is there tends to be a whole lot of sound and fury, if you'll excuse me hijacking the phrase a bit here, surrounding nothing. Instead of signifying nothing, it's surrounding nothing. When you actually get to the heart of it, it's like, this is what it's over. We're having
We're dying on this hill.
Yeah, this is Hamburger Hill. Mm-hmm. And when that episode dropped, you know, Chad was in a place where he was emotionally venting, and some people had responses from it that ran the full gamut from complete support. Chad's 100% right. Yeah,
even beyond complete support, where they're saying, you need to dump your group and get a new one because they're disrespectful bastards.
Exactly. to the far opposite extreme.
I mean, we are in some ways, but that's beside the point.
And to the far opposite extreme of Chad needs to be put on a boat and kicked off the shore and never seen again. And it is funny.
And he does, but again, that's a side point.
They just can't catch me.
But it's funny, though, how when it actually came down to it, you know, when to use a Danism, the rubber actually hit the road on this.
Bringing it back.
Yeah, bringing it way back. That effectively nothing occurred. I mean, that it all occurred.
We had a conversation between friends and I expressed
it. It reminds me of so many other stupid things like this, like Gnarlgate.
Right.
There was a game where Gnarl got killed, and I was upset because I felt that he had been killed unfairly because it involved some Splatbook stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think there were some points where Chad didn't quite understand. He overestimated how powerful Gnarl actually was.
Oh, no. I didn't understand D&D rules. Yeah. So who is shocked?
But the point being that it was like, you know, this big to-do until Chad and I were like, you know what? Let's meet up at this restaurant, specifically is the place called The Post. Mm-hmm.
Was it the Post or was it Scottish Arms?
It was the Post.
The Post? I think it was Scottish Arms, and we need to have a fight about
okay.
it.
Okay. We'll drink over this one, too. Yeah. But that's what we did. We met up. It's like, you know what? We'll get a few deep, and we'll figure this out.
Right.
And you know what happened? We got a few deep, and it was all cool. It's like, this was...
Not only did we get a few deep, which is great on an, in and of itself.
Yeah. And also a gentleman's club I've been to.
We talked it out, and in the process of talking it out, we actually came up with a really cool story about Gnarl, because we're like, okay, are we going to retcon this? And we're both like, you know, retconning is really stupid.
It's kind of weak.
Yeah. And we came up with this whole great story, and it's like this prophecy and stuff is really neat.
So let me do something that I very rarely do. Maybe mm-hmm. this is the first time.
A woman.
And actually, there's been twice. But let me get serious for a moment. And as douchey as this is going to sound, I think the most precious commodity that you have is your attention, right? And we have the expression to pay attention.
Right.
I think that your players have an obligation to pay you their attention. Mm-hmm. And as much as this might reignite the subject for some people, I think that it is extremely disrespectful and rude to be on your phone separating yourself from the game. If you are utilizing the phone to escape the escape that is the game, that is tremendously disrespectful, not only to the person who's put forth the effort to run the game, but to the other people at the table who are paying attention.
Well, and this is also the one thing that's always been a little bit difficult for me, because during most games, I will be using a cell phone or laptop.
Right, but as an asset to
but
the game.
Relevant.
Right.
The problem is, I mean, for example, in your war game, I was using it to look up the price of things that I had won on the Price is Right.
Sure.
You know, when we were playing the D&D game, I was using it for Mythweavers, and mm-hmm. I was looking up a bunch of stuff. Yeah. And there's all this kind of side stuff, but it was all game relevant. I was not sitting there checking my email, checking Facebook, looking at pornography.
Texting was the
even,
thing.
But even that sometimes though can be a problem.
No, I'm using it for game things. Yes, and I get that. But I think what bothers me is the fact that it's very hard for me to communicate to the other people around the table. That's not what I'm doing. You know, that I'm doing this.
Well, I disagree
not
with that. In the game that I ran at the last Fear of the Con 8, you did exactly that. You said, hey, by the way, I'm using my phone as part to look up these prices for my character.
Full transparency. That's right. Admirable.
Yeah, and that's why I did it, was because I know a lot of people will see me staring at my phone and will just presume that I'm playing Words of Friends or Pokemon Go now or whatever it is people are playing nowadays.
I have seen it really help a game to have that information available right there. And I've seen it hurt the game as well, spending time actually looking up the relevant information. I've seen the same player have that problem, you know, both a great thing and a problem. And that player was Chad.
Yep, absolutely me.
Chad will spend so much time trying to find the right song to play that is game relevant.
Not only to put emotion into the song, but this is the song, the acoustic version of the song my character is playing at that moment. Oh, man, that's awesome when you just belt that out and you put it on low and it's like in the background, we're still role playing. It really adds to it.
When he finds it quick, it's great. When it's taking him a while to find exactly what he's looking for.
Yeah.
And the game goes on without him, and suddenly it just starts playing when we're two scenes later.
Yep. And then I have to, like, play a song. Is this the right one? No, this isn't the right one. I'm, like, friggin' RPG DJ there.
So, but my point is, if I bring my phone to play Words
you
of Friends...
You don't own a phone.
You're right. But if I did, and I'm playing a game on my phone during the role-playing game, what's different than me, I don't know, bringing my laptop and checking my email? Or just bringing a novel and reading during the game?
Right. There isn't one. I mean, and I am the first to say that I don't believe that a person has the ability to have 100% attention to a game at a time. People's attention wanes, it waxes, it comes, it goes. And then also, if you're sitting there for like 8 hours or whatever playing a game, your brain has to take a mental break and walk away and that sort of thing. But if that's all it was, if it was just like, okay, Dan and Brodor are role-playing, Wayne's running the game, and I'm flipping my phone out, and I just check Facebook real quick, and I'm on there for a minute, and I put my phone away, and then it's my scene, and I pick up, and it's good, that would be awesome. But that's not what happens. That's what people think happens. But what happens is, in this scenario, Wayne's Run the Game. It's Dan and Brodor's scene. I whip out my phone. I'm checking Facebook. I make angry political posts. I talk about this and that.
Then you watch a Doctor Who porn.
Then I watch Doctor Who porn. And then I'm somebody texts me. I throw a text. Well, now it's a half hour later. And then Wayne says, okay, so now you're going in the bar, but the bar is filled with vampires. And then I'm like, vampires? Bar? When did we go in the bar? What are all these vampires doing here?
And then, or like me right now, I'm thinking about Rose naked.
Right.
Because I'm not giving you the respect that you deserve listening to you talk about vampires and bars and where do they come from and how are we in a bar?
That's right.
Because Rose is naked.
Rose who? Like Rose?
Doctor Who.
Oh, she's a companion.
I don't feel like Rose McGowan or
who. Blonde has big
dirty
gap
companion.
Okay. So I think the punchline to this is when you guys hear us rant on this show, by all means, I mean, we love it when you guys sound off and share whatever you have to say. But do keep in mind that oftentimes what you're catching is our raw take on a situation that in truth has a lot more nuance. You might be catching us like in that moment of agitation, that moment of honesty before we ourselves take that deep breath, get some perspective, and handle it differently, because the way that this actually worked out was very peaceful and amicable.
It wasn't
this huge dramatic blow up of
the thing I did that I think that made it work, made it not go down in a bad way, is that when I spoke, I very specifically did not lay blame, even on a sort of subconscious level. Like, the guys are sitting around me now, so we have Wayne to my left, Brodor in front of me, Dan to my right. And let's say I'm telling you guys this.
I got the best seat in the house, baby.
That's right. So
if, sitting in Candida's lap.
If I sit here and I say, okay, we're having a problem with cell phones, and I say that entire sentence, and I'm looking right at Brodor, there's kind of an implication that...
that I should buy one?
You should buy one to justify having a problem with one.
The problem is you don't have one.
So when I talked about it, I didn't look at anybody. I was looking at the table. I looked up at the ceiling because I didn't want to say, I have a problem and the problem is you, individual you guy sitting right there. And I never called anyone out. It was always in terms of we and us. And whenever it was an individual, it was always me. I have this issue. I have this problem. I need some help from the group to solve my problem that I'm having, sort of stuff.
Sure.
Because as soon as you start saying, hey, there's an uncomfortable situation and it involves you, well, suddenly you get defensive and you want to start swinging. Well, no, it can't possibly be me. But if you make it part of a group thing and you make it to where, you know, hey, you guys love me and we're all friends and I've got this problem. Well, now it changes. Now you want to help. And now you want to draw in and work together to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, when we're intimate, I want you to choke me a little.
That's right.
Or a lot.
Yeah. And Pat was so incensed about this whole thing, and then he got cancer. So, I mean, that's what happened.
Damn.
I have to say, though, the one thing about the situation that I do have a tremendous amount of respect for you is that I would not have kept my cool about it. I would have stewed on it for a long time and then I would have just exploded about the situation and likely would have killed my game. I would have not handled it as maturely as
as Chad and Wayne can attest, I'm on both sides of that, where a handful of years ago I'd have been the same way you were, where I was a student, I worked myself up and up and up and up and up and overshot the point.
Right.
Whereas that's something that I've worked on, and I don't know if you guys can agree or disagree, but I've worked on very much over the past several years to instead de-escalate myself and come back.
Yeah,
we
had that conversation a while ago about how, you know, your approach to problem issues is great. I mean, it's just like, you know, let everybody and everyone calm down, and then instead of approaching the issue when you're all spun up and angry, not just now I'm talking about everybody,
right.
Spun up and angry, approach it with logic and reason and remember that these are your friends and you love them.
And to be honest, the whole thing came up at the beginning of the game because I wasn't dealing with it when I was running a game. I was getting annoyed by it, but I just let it go.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't step up to deal with it. So Chad's like, so if I'm going to run it, I'm not going to deal with
Wayne
it.
Wayne handed you an unweeded garden. So.
Now, I did go off one time.
You what did.
Pushed me over the limit was Doctor Who porn.
Yes. That was because it wasn't the fact that Pat looks at porn. Because big shock. Pat's looking at porn. Yeah. It was that Doctor Who porn. You know, I made a joke, or somebody made a joke, you know, they made this Australian porn that was the Doctor Who theme as a parody and all this sort of stuff. And Pat's like, really? I gotta look this up. So he looks it up. Well, instead of just, like, looking up a couple of dirty pictures or playing a couple of seconds of the video, he loads the whole thing up. He's watching the video. I think he had his headphones in.
I think that was the only time as a GM that I literally lost it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know how long ago.
We're looking at him, and we're like, Pat, it's not funny. Put the phone away.
Yeah.
And he's like, huh. It's just like,
geez. In the internet age, I don't know. Yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
So, Wayne.
All
right.
That was a hell of a banter.
Yeah. Okay. So all and of before this... anybody writes me angry letters, Pat and I joke about his cancer all the time.
Yeah. So it's gallows humor.
Yes, it is.
It's our issue. Yeah. Let us handle it in our way. We love you guys. Yeah. On this one thing, let us handle it our way. So, all right.
So all of this
leading punting to a different topic.
All of this leading up to Chad has set that down, and I'm going to continue that rule into the next game
because this killed the game and gave Pat cancer. So, I mean, that's really what happened.
Yes. The cell phone gave him cancer, and that's why I don't have one.
There you go, Mr. So now the Strays game, the Blades in the Dark game is over.
He's holding the phone to his pancreas.
Maybe he was.
They vibrate.
Wayne, the pancreas, not the prostate.
No more cell phone talk.
Yes.
You had a banter topic.
So the whole point is I am now running the next game.
Okay.
So as we're getting ready to run this next game.
What is the next game?
Next game, we're going back to Dresden Files.
Okay.
Yes!
All right. Chad is creating a new character because I killed his character.
Okay.
You bastard.
So
a few drinks he's either the post or Scottish Arms. But first you have to have a few drinks somewhere else to figure out whether those drinks will be at the post or Scottish Arms.
Exactly.
Right. You're through this. But
so
go on.
Anyway, Chad has his character all thought out.
Okay.
Love the character idea.
Right.
He's going through trying to pick powers.
Okay.
And he comes up with this idea.
I've completely changed my powers, by the way.
And he goes through, here's the list of that's actually a good thing.
Yeah, because they were pretty ridiculous.
As he went through, he's like, here's what I want to do. I want to take absorption power. The original was a copying power.
Oh, yes. It was the ability
to duplicate other people's powers.
So he's like Ditto.
Kind of. Okay. More like Rogue.
Yeah.
So once he says all this down, I look at him and it's like, okay, I'm not saying no. If this is the character you want to play, we'll make it work.
Okay.
I really dislike having that power set in games that I'm running.
Yeah. And he said it to me just like that.
Yeah.
You know, just totally straight shooting.
Yep. I'm like, this is my issue, and I'm not going to say no to your character, but I really dislike that power set. I would love it if you would do something
absolutely
different.
Absolutely no problem whatsoever changing.
So this got me wondering for everyone else what power set, what things in their game they don't like to see and why. My case for this. In the previous game that I ran was a Mutants and Masterminds game, and somebody had that power set. It worked very much the same. The problem is the mechanics of that in every system I've seen. You take the power, you have however many points in it, and then you have to do the math of the power you're copying, and it becomes a rules nightmare to have that power in your game, and the whole flow of the game gets screwed up, and then you have somebody else who has the power to copy or duplicate, and then they duplicate the duplication power, and it gives me a headache. I don't want that anywhere in my game because it's too complicated.
You know what this reminds me of, though? Of course, you don't have to do the head.
And I don't want Chad, who doesn't like rules, to have that.
Is in Final Fantasy, what happens when both parties, both you and the enemies, have reflect?
Yes.
And yeah, exactly. Because in each Final Fantasy game, there's a finite number of bounces before it sticks, but trying to figure out what that would do, especially, once again, well, I think it also could have the problem, specifically with a dittoing power, of it could theoretically.
Pokemon Go nerd.
Dude, I
they just
played,
added you... Ditto to the game.
Dude, I know. They just
added... I heard Diddle.
The only reason
you always hear Diddle.
The only reason Ditto's even on my mind is so they just added Ditto to the game. I actually haven't played the game in months.
Ditto on
I've actually
my
been
mind.
Playing a Transformers game.
Yes.
Because they have a Gen 1 Transformers game called Transformers Earth Wars, and you can make freaking Devastator. So
just to drive Chad crazy, how you catch Ditto. It doesn't pop up as Ditto.
Everything.
It pops up as...
Because it's faking another Pokemon.
Yes, it pops up as either a Magikarp or a Rattata or one of the basic ones. And then once you catch it, there's this big purple ball and it transforms into a Ditto.
Yeah.
And you have a Ditto.
I know. I actually haven't played that game in several months. But the point being, though...
Yeah. And you call yourself an addict.
I don't call myself an addict.
No, I call you an addict.
I call myself a borderline benzo addict and alcohol abuser. But here are
so the whole point to the whole conversation.
All right, things that yeah. I there are powers or player types or character types, whatever, that you don't want in your game. But the second thing I think that's worth looking at is the different types of reasons. Possibly reason one and two, if you have in here, is one. It's not going to fit Chad's playstyle well because Chad, he's a narrative type player.
Yep.
Even in Dresden, this is going to be a math heavy sort of power. The second being that it can, especially in a game, for example, I know people like Pat, it's a big deal to them to know that their character is unique.
Yes.
And so if you have somebody mimicking everything they do, it's going to degrade that for them and it's going to create some group issues, whatever. All right.
Yep.
So let me give you...
In that case, and for all of it, it really is a mechanical issue for that one choice. I also would ask someone not to do time travel powers, and there's nothing mechanical about it. It just makes stories convoluted.
And that's why I asked for time travel to be in this game. He asked us, well, what do you guys want to see in this game? And I was like, well, I wouldn't mind seeing this and this. And, you know, in Dresden Verse, time travel is like horrible. It's like very bad crime, and nobody does it because. And I'm like, I kind of want to explore that. Yeah. I want to explore.
We did time travel. Okay,
I love time travel.
We did time travel in that Epoch of Rhysos game, where that's like it's another one where in that setting it's a big like I don't touch it. I let you play a character.
I was a time traveler.
Was a time traveler who was basically there is this event horizon. Mm-hmm. I'm not literally an event horizon, but there's this event that basically is an extinction event for the galaxy that's approaching. And Chad was someone from the future who came...
I was the scientist who invented time
travel. Yeah, who invented time travel just prior to that extinction event.
For the purpose of...
going back in time to try to stop the extinction event. And we had this... I won't bore everyone with the gaming story, but we had this great story around
it. This is a really good story.
Where it turns out in the end that the time travel didn't work. And there was it was also their craziness.
Well, everyone knows I love time travel. And I have no problem with it being in a game. But if a character has it, suddenly the game becomes about time travel.
Well, all right. So let me give you my short list of things that I just plain. I wouldn't say I won't allow, but I will say you are already facing a major uphill sell. Because I'm the sort of person, there used to be things I just plain didn't allow. But over time, I've become more mellow. I've become more open-minded.
Monks, half-orcs, half-orc monks, monks who are half-orcs.
I will never specifically tell...
Especially with Sword and Fist. It's, holy crap, that was a massive mistake.
I will never specifically tell a player that they can't do something that's in the book within character creation. I will tell them why I don't want them to do it. But I'll never say no.
I have found, certainly, that depending on the game, sometimes just limiting the books... fixes D&D in particular.
No,
but it's not just D&D.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the first on my list is I limit the number of splat books and bull books you have access to as a player.
Yeah, you have to pick it from this book. It has to be a book standard something. You can't invent something. In Battletech, I may say you have to pick your mech from one of these books.
Right,
you
but there's a guy online. He's got this forum, and he designs his own mechs.
Yeah, exactly. And
that guy is me, and I'm playing my own mech.
But
I am the mech.
Here's my big three. Number one is at-will invisibility, because I have...
Like, you totally disallow it, or it's a hard sell?
I would say that one, it's going to be all but a total disallow. Like, this is an 89-degree uphill climb to sell me on this one. Hmm. Because
what if we're playing the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and I want to play Mr. Invisible?
Well, maybe in that situation, but in most games... it has just been used to do nothing but bypass. It's the go-to solution for every
plot
point.
What if I want to play Invisible Man instead of The Invisible Man?
Don't even exactly know what that means.
It's a different book.
Okay.
And he doesn't have superpowers.
But the point being that I have just had that used so many times to become the go-to for every plot point, every encounter. It's what Blizzard would call bypassing content, and I hate that phrase because it's their way of saying we couldn't design the world better or we want you to suffer through our treadmill,
yes,
to be blunt. But the point being that it was used so many times to screw me as both a game master and a fellow player.
So even if you had a player you know would not screw you, it's just like you have this PTSD about it.
Yes, like, yes.
Yeah. Okay, I think you could, I mean, that's to me, that's completely reasonable.
You could sell me on it, but, I mean, this is going to require a long talk. Right. I'm going to have a therapy dog with me the whole time. I mean, there's going to be, I'm going to suddenly start backing the X card. And when you go invisible, I'm just going to touch the X card.
Well, so on the surface of it, it's like, well, that's unreasonable. You have a problem, Dan. You need to get over your problem. Well, to me, a lot goes into being a GM.
Oh, yeah.
And you want the GM to be happy. You want the GM to be comfortable. You want the GM to be able to feel that they can tell a story without being fettered by stuff you're doing, but that you enhance the story. So,
right, as opposed to me wanting some simple bullshit power,
right,
that I can circumvent your game and your narrative and your effort at every turn,
like, yeah, the ability, yeah, to time travel back 1 hour.
Yeah,
the power could be so abused so badly, even by people, like even somebody who doesn't want to abuse it.
Yeah,
if you have a character that has that ability and one of your buddy's characters just gets killed, why would that character not do it?
That would be if I don't want the power. Well, maybe in real life, but I don't want a character with the power. How I would use that power, I would approach, say I like was approaching you, Wayne, about it. And it's like, okay, I have this character concept. You can travel back in time at will anytime he wants, 1 hour. That's the limiter. It's only 1 hour. I can't kill Hitler. What I would do is I would say, here's the thing. I don't control the power. It's not like some outside force is throwing me through a portal.
Or it's quantum leap-ish.
Or it's quantum leap-ish. It's not that. I am totally cool with handing the reins of the power over to you. So, like, I'm running along and my buddy gets killed, and then Wayne kind of gives me a nod, and then Wayne and I give the nod back, and then Wayne is like, and then you travel back in time an hour to save your buddy's life.
And you know, I would start a session with a total party wipe.
Okay, right. So, I would be totally down with that.
Before I get to my other two, I'm going to jump kind of ahead to the end of this topic to tell you what one of my solutions has been for this kind of issue.
Is it a therapy dog?
Almost.
A therapy
dog. One of my dogs is a therapy dog.
is trying to play a little bit of you keep it under control and I'll keep it under control.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first place I did this was with wishes, mm-hmm, where I started telling the players, like, they would get a ring of wish in D&D. Now, obviously, I gave that to them, okay? That's not something you just automatically get. But I would tell them, the more reasonable the wish, the less I'm going to monkey paw,
right,
the wording. So if you say, I wish that I had 100 gold pieces.
Sure.
Sure, you have 100 gold pieces. If you say, I wish I went up 10 levels, then suddenly you are 10 stories in the air hovering right over the lava. And
see,
that's the way we're going to play. And I would do the same thing with those kinds of powers. Where if you came to me and said, I want to be able to do at-will invisibility, it'd be like, okay, but if you want full control over this, there's going to be some kind of a risk or some kind of a drawback. If you don't have full control over it, then I will be sure that it's useful to you, but it's also working at
I want useful store invisibility, but I can only be invisible when no one's looking at me.
Yeah, or exactly. Something like Infernal's Watch Mystery Men. Or maybe you can only be invisible for like,
hooray, naked. Put some clothes on.
If you want to fight crime today.
But and I would still make people make stealth rolls. You're invisible, but that doesn't mean you're quiet.
Well, it depends on, in D&D, improved invisibility is quiet.
Ah.
And so I had somebody pull an at-will, and it's a long story. It's a horror story. But yeah. All right. But let me give you my other two, and these kind of fall under the same thing. Of if they were done right, I think I would allow them. The problem is, one of them I don't think just works. I just don't think it works in general. The other, I have never seen done right. And I'll start with that one. The one I have never seen done right, except once. And I'm looking at Chad, which, of course, everyone at home can see.
But you're also doing the finger up, I'm making a point.
I'm even making the, I've got the finger up if I'm making a point here, that Chad is one person I've seen do this well. Anyone else you would be on an 89-degree uphill sell with me is playing a child prodigy. I want you guys to think through every TV show, every movie you've ever watched that had a child prodigy where you did not want to get step into the screen.
And slap their face off.
And, slap them senseless.
Not only was I a child prodigy, I was a female child prodigy.
Yes, and that was when we were having a lot of problem with people playing different gendered characters.
Right.
And you played a character who was not only a child prodigy, was also female, and did it well. Mm-hmm. But I have seen since then other people play different genders well. I have never, or at least not many, nothing that's coming to mind,
right,
seen a character in a TV show, movie, book, role-playing game, video game, that was a child prodigy that I did not want to push in front of the first truck driving by. And just, maybe Stewie Griffin. That's the one I'll give you. But outside of, but it's supposed to be comedy, you know, it's supposed to be terrible. And it's, no, Bim burned me on this. Because every one of his characters was a child prodigy orphan. And
they're all Bruce Wayne.
They were.
But he was a Spider-Man fan.
Yes.
So they were the deep, dark broodingness of Bruce Wayne with the wacky adventurism of Spider-Man.
And the powers of this power level of Spider-Man.
Of Galactus.
Yeah. The one that I say I would hesitate to allow without a lot of careful thought to it, but I think I would ease off from where I was before, is my favorite D&D setting to run is Pre-Time of Troubles, Forgotten Realms. In Pre-Time of Troubles, Forgotten Realms, if you go back to like the second edition stuff, the goblinoid hordes, which included the orcs, so the goblin marches, which once again included the orcs, they were mindless savages. Mm-hmm. And when you had, and I apologize for one, this is going to upset, but this is just the truth, when you had a half-orc in the setting, it was typically the result of an orc raping an elven woman. Mm-hmm. This was written into the setting. That's the way it was. And so a half-orc was not just someone who kind of reminds you of the bad guy. This was the direct result of what we would call a war crime, and certainly would be a difficult issue for many people to deal with. And a lot of people just took orc because it gives you the +2 strength, +2 con. It's a min-max character. And they would not be prepared to deal with the really difficult social issues, or maybe the people at the table wouldn't want to deal with the social issues that surround that.
What it meant is that, you, like you said, you get the plus con, plus strength, and you go into a town, and the council, we don't serve your type here, and the player's like, oh, goody, I get to have a bar fight, and then I get to beat up the town guard for experience and take and sell their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And now, I will say,
every time, Brodor, without fail, no one can write a deep half-orc character.
And I will
absolute.
Say, the one I've backed off on now that I've understood what the problem was, is I used to just straight out the box forbid monks until I had somebody sit down with me and demonstrate the issue was not monks. The issue was sword and fist.
Yeah.
And so the problem was I got snowed by a splat book. And so
sword and fist kind of sounds like it could be a gentleman's club.
Dude, it might as well be, because you open that book up, you're getting so
for $1
and whatever the price tag on that book is, it was seriously, the monk, even at high levels, the wizard was like, why am I here?
Right.
And I mean, that's how ridiculously broken it was. And I thought it was the monk in general. Mm-hmm. And it was not until later, like I said, people sat me down like, dude, these powers you're describing are not monk powers. Monks are actually kind of a mediocre to crappy class. Mm-hmm. The issue was sword and fist. There were a bunch of optional feats in there that let this guy just... But my problem there with monks was a different one. Thereafter was I simply had an issue, because when the monk came along in D&D was at the time when a lot of these, you know, Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, and these sort of, you know, not all that deep, not all that woke cultured sort of pseudo Shaolin movies were making their way into mainstream American entertainment. And you're playing what is in every regard a European medieval or gothic or dark ages game. And all of a sudden, for no particular reason, is Mystical Chi Dragon Fist Man. And it's like, this just doesn't fit. But I will say,
you know what's funny about the Kung Fu, the David Carradine TV show from the 70s or whatever the hell it was, is that that didn't take place in Asia. It was a Western.
Yeah.
You had a Kung Fu guy in, you know, let's take this outside and bang, bang, and at the poker table rustling.
Yeah. Because there was a lot of Chinese immigration in the Old West.
David Carradine wasn't Chinese.
No, he wasn't. I'm not saying he was. But the point being that there was some explanation for how those cultures came together.
Yes, and I have fond memories of the show. Don't ruin them. I've never gone back to watch it again.
Did you ever
if it holds up.
The reboot of, of Kung Fu Legend Continues, which takes place in modern day?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. But the point being,
with David Carradine, it's like only 20 years later.
The point being that the same guy who screwed me on Sword and Fist actually did sell me on a pretty good monk, because he played a monk who followed, this was actually a post Time of Troubles god that I allowed him to use, is a god called Illmater. And Illmater is a god of death and suffering, but not evil. He's more like, I suffer on your behalf, more that kind of, he's not evil. And so the reason that he used his fists was because the idea was that what he was doing had to hurt him. And
it's Bim.
Well, it's Bim, but the thing was, I gave him, and he agreed to, several powers that were fairly high end, and that you can do these really devastating effects, but it is going to destroy you to use them. So, like, you can do something like put a hand on somebody and they effectively become invincible, but when you do it, you drop to flat 0 hit points and pass out and are basically, you know, on the brink of death. And I don't remember all of them, but it was stuff like that, where the more that you are willing to suffer, the more that you can do for the people around you. And he actually accepted that part, and that part really worked. And it did not, to me, feel like a cultural misplacement. Like, we just suddenly have this random fragment of Chinese culture in the middle of this European story, where it just doesn't make any sense. There's no context to it.
See, that's why take that feeling you have there, and that's how I feel about Shadowrun.
I understand. It works for me, but I understand.
Yeah,
I get it. I totally get it. Just like I hope there are people right now who may say, Dan, I disagree with you. I think it's great having ninjas and samurai and whatever in my
fairy tale castles.
Fairy tales. And that's chill. I just hope that you can see, hey, I understand why Dan would maybe not want this.
They're great Oriental adventures.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I have them, and that's where they fit.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you, and that's why in my current 5th edition game, I told my players, no, because it doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. No, you can't play that. It's my favorite word in a game. No. I know you guys are all yes and very happy and proactive.
No, Dan's not.
I'm very much yes, but. Yeah. Dan, not yes, and.
Dan's the hammer. Bastard.
I like to think of myself more like the M-dash, for anyone who's really into punctuation. Whereas it's like, I'm going to be an interrupting thought. I'm not yes, and. That's a continuing thought. I'm yes, but. Or yes, however. Or maybe even we'll flip this to, but yes. We can play this all kinds of ways.
But yes is yet another gentleman's club.
Yes, it is. Candy. as well.
Yes. I'm more yes if you really want me to be miserable.
When I think that what you brought up early on when you first pitched the subject at dinner and here when you presented it on the mics, I think that's the most important thing, is that I, as the game master, don't want to inhibit your fun. Please pay me that same courtesy and not
don't
diminish
disrupt
mine.
The intention of the game.
And the way I see it, too, when I'm making a character, the character is in its proto stage. When I'm discussing it with the GM, it's in its proto stages. I don't think it's a good idea to go to a GM and say, I have this character. It's A, B, and C. And the GM's like, well, C doesn't really work in this setting, and I don't know about that. No, my character's A, B, and C. Here's the completed character sheet and the $100 art I've commissioned for the character, and I'm cosplaying it at the convention this year. No,
there's a lot of other games where you can play that character.
Right.
It just doesn't have to be mine.
Just because it's never used as an example, let's keep going with D&D.
Oh, God, yes, please. I think the forum conversations after this.
I think most people would say, if you walked up to him and said, look, I want to play a 40K obliterator in your D&D game, I think most people would understand that the GM's going to say no and pretty reasonable.
You could kind of make that work in canon, though.
Probably. But the point is that, you know, I think most people understand why someone would say no to that. Mm-hmm. On the far opposite extreme, I think most people would say, if I want to play a generic fighter or whatever, most GMs are going to say yes. And what we're talking about is that landscape between of what are these things that could work but are...
I could easily see a player coming to you and saying, I want to play a monk. I don't understand why you're saying no. This is a core character, because in 5th edition, I think it is one of the core classes.
So, and this is where I'm a very dictatorial game master, is that regardless of the game, whether it's D&D or Savage Worlds or the Knights Black Asians games that I've been kicking around in my head for a bit now, I put together a game template would be the best way to describe it, sort of like the group template. I sit down and I write a player handout, right, that I give to all my players about.
And they don't read.
Yeah. What's that?
And they don't read.
Yeah. So
I didn't read the rules. Why the fuck am I going to read this?
So basically what I'll do, and that's the catch, is that the first game session is always, let's get together. Let's talk about the game. Let's talk about expectations. Let's talk about the characters that you're going to make and how everyone fits together, right? But the first thing I'll do is I'll hand out that player handout, and then I go over it point by point with them. So this is sort of the themes I want to explore with the game. Here's sort of the meta plot idea I have for the game. Here are the character creation rules and options and restrictions, and I'll do that for each game that I run, and then so we can have that conversation. Well, Mike, we're playing D&D. I was really thinking about playing a monk. Why doesn't a monk make sense? And then we can go over that.
Because I think that's a big part of it is, first of all, you have to know why you don't want it in your game before you say it. It may just be a case of, let's say you just think monks are stupid.
Right.
It's not easy to explain to someone why you think something is just stupid.
Right, but culturally, if you know why it doesn't make sense,
right,
is a much stronger argument.
Exactly, and I think that the players, I think you kind of owe it to them to be able to explain to them why you're saying no.
I completely
agree. At creation.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I mean, in my current campaign, there are two primary human cultures. One is more technologically advanced, and so there are restrictions in, you know, which of those two human cultures your particular character comes from and what class options you have and what equipment options you might have at the beginning of the game. Now, of course, those cultures are blending and blah, blah, blah. And again, I don't want to bore people with gaming stories, but it was important to me to have a particular theme and vibe to the game. And that's something I want to do from the onset of every game that I run. But that comes with some parameters.
So I would be curious to hear, both as you guys develop these thoughts over the coming week and also as people listen to this episode, what are the things that, and I got two questions here. Number one, you don't allow in your games and why? And number two, what are the things that you used to not allow in your games, but now will, with what caveats and what changed your mind? So there's the two things I want you three to be thinking about, and I want the listeners to be thinking about, is what don't you allow and why, and what did you used to not allow, but now do allow, and what caveats and what changed your mind? So that's going to be the parting shot for this week. So I want to thank you guys again for tuning in and for all that you're doing to support this show. Here we are at the end of episode. Anyone's butt hurting?
I got to tell you, what my ass feels right now, the discomfort that it feels is, I'm not bullshit, like the first 60 seconds in the old chair. I'm serious. It's amazing.
I'm at a point now where I can go for a second episode.
Yeah.
Just roll into it.
So
if it was earlier in the evening, I would be in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2016. Listeners are free to use this episode in any non-commercial endeavor so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the RPG Academy network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at therpgacademy.com/network.